Especially pain that you don't choose is much easier, by the way. Like if you ask me today, what is easier, building companies or going through cancer? It's definitely going through cancer for me. For me, I'm not talking about others. But because for me, I think there is a difference between something you know you can't quit mentally. It's tough. You can just quit, go get a job, and, you know, enjoy life.
First off, thank you to all of you for joining. Tariq Baya, host of Talks with T, a show that tells the story of the entrepreneur from the entrepreneur's perspective. So less about the company, more about the struggles and tribulations of being an entrepreneur. I'm very honored to have Abdelmajid from Tamara with us today. I think you and I have been exchanging messages for a year trying to get this set up, and what a way to do the show other than SEF.
Yeah, and that speaks to the, you know, life. Sometimes things don't happen for a good reason because you want them to happen in the best way possible. So we're here sharing this with an amazing audience.
Yeah, and this is off the cuff, not scripted, so we're super excited to see how we're going to take this conversation. My real hustle is Bezat, which is a startup that we've been building for the past 7 years. And when I reflect on my journey, I always say you have to be somewhat either naive or crazy to do a startup. So I'm wondering what that says about you, because not only did you co-found Nana, which is the largest grocery digital platform in Saudi, but you also started Tamara as well, which is the largest buy now pay later player in Saudi Arabia. So is everything okay?
Listen, it's, I think, especially we're here with people who I'm sure are excited about entrepreneurship. And I think we can absolutely for sure know that entrepreneurship is one of the toughest endeavors in life. I call it a pain that you choose to have. And there are two kinds of pain, actually. Like, there is a pain you don't choose to have, and there is a pain you choose to have. The pain you choose to have is a very different type of pain. You can always live with a pain that is just, you know, happened to be in your life. But I think, personally, I realized early in my life that I love challenges. I don't wake up looking for, you know, a comfortable day. I wake up looking for the toughest challenge out there. I'm that kind of guy who, if I play a game, I will never stop until I win. I want to win. I want to play the game. But then realize, as I grew older, it's a bit too childish to think about just gaming and winning. And entrepreneurship sparked something as I got older that I believed so much in, which is you wake up every day, you work really hard, you push yourself, but the impact goes way beyond yourself. It's not about you. It's not about your legacy. It's not about what you can do and what you cannot do. The beauty about entrepreneurship is that if you do it well, the impact is way beyond yourself. So that's exactly what actually, you know, sparked this in me. And that's why I tell everyone, like, no matter what happened, I will continue to build. I don't envy people by the beach. I will go to the beach. You will find me at the beach sometime, but I will not be at the beach all the time. I love working and I love building things.
Yeah. And where do you think that comes from? Like, what's your first memory or recollection where you felt this fire or passion to build?
Listen, I never sold a lemonade when I was young. Let me be very clear.
I had a lemonade stand.
I never did this. I never sold anything to my friends in school. I'm not that kind of guy. I actually didn't like business people, and I still don't. I'm not, that was not the thing that drove me to it. I actually, you know, the beauty about the household I grew up in is my father is a very organic liberal guy. He's not really ideological about it, but that's who he is. He's natural about it. He let me to choose things in life. So when I, you know, graduated from school, I did very well because I wanted to do something in my life. I didn't know even what to do. Like I went.
Like most of us.
Yeah, I was like, what am I going to get into? I get accepted in the medicine school.
Yeah.
And an engineering school, and then I went for computer engineering in the U.S. I learned immediately I don't want to be an engineer.
Yeah.
Actually, I actually liked economics.
Mm.
I wanted to understand the bigger things. Because economics, the beauty about it as a topic is it tells you about what's happening and why things are happening the way they are happening.
Yeah.
And there, I realized I don't just want to do something because everybody is doing it. I want to do something that I can be good at and impactful. With school, I start reading and meeting people and allowing myself to, you know, make different choices. And somehow, don't ask me how, I realized after my master's, because I wanted to also go to academia.
Yeah.
Like I had these, you know, moments of I don't know what do I want a lot as a young person, but I was driven. So after I finished my master's, I realized I'm not gonna be really a good academician, you know, professor. I will not add value to the field.
Yeah,
I will not be the best at it. So, but I remember one course I took, which was in psychology, an elective course, and somehow that course resonated very well with me. And in it, it teaches you a lot of things. But one of the things we learned was type of intelligence, and one of the most neglected type of intelligence is knowing yourself.
Yeah.
Like, what are you good at? What are you not good at? And doubling down on what you're good at rather than trying to improve what you're not good at. So I start realizing who I am as I grew up. And I realized, you know what? I see the big picture. I love working hard with people. I love smart people. And I love impact. And so somehow the answer was build companies. Because if you have the big picture and if you love to work hard and challenge yourself and you love working with people, then this is the best endeavor. And that's how it happened. Like it was so organic somehow. I never really intended to. I was not really that when I was young. I just grew to become who I am today.
Yeah, and I always tell, you know, people who are getting into the workforce, I say one way to figure out what you want to do in life, because I don't think university prepares you for that, is to try a bunch of different things and figure out what you don't want to do in life, right? And through process of elimination, even that data point by itself starts guiding you in the direction of this is my calling, this is what I want to do.
Exactly. And this is so underrated. Like, I don't recall I was told this when I was young. I think it's very critical that, you know, if you find, like, maybe that's different schools, but if you found your kid to be so good at something, maybe nurture them, but allow them to make choices. Allow them to decide to go right or left and make mistakes and get up. Because there is no one path in life. It's what matters is you figure it out, and if you figure it out, you believe it so much that you know it is you, rather than it was chosen by your family or someone else.
Yeah, I really like what you said, that there's no one path, right? If you look at, you know, I've been doing this show now for 3 years. Every entrepreneur has their own path, their own story, their own version of how things happened. And I think there's this misconception that for me to start something, for me to be a successful entrepreneur, I must do 1, 2, 3, 4. And that's not necessarily the case. So you have this idea that your purpose is to build. That's a starting point. the next question is, what do I build, right? And so walk me through the journey from that realization until actually getting started.
So the beauty about life is there is so many problems. And I think as an entrepreneur, you need to know what you're about. Are you a domain expert and that's what you want to be? Or are you a problem solver? I don't think the best entrepreneurs are domain experts necessarily. They could be as they grow into it. But they actually start so out of the box that domain experts will call them crazy.
Yeah.
So the way I see how you pick whatever you go with is there is, you know, a lot of luck into it. Meaning the right idea, the right time will come to you. All you have to do is believe in yourself. Work really hard. Wait for it. It will come. This is my third startup. The first one was in 2016, and I learned it the hard way. It was a good idea. It was actually in food delivery. I was one of the first in the region, but I didn't have the money to fund myself. And in Saudi especially, there was no VC whatsoever. And I hit a wall. I hit the worst wall ever, which is you had no safety net. You had nothing. Boom. Everybody's, look, we told you, don't quit your job. Go back to job. And through this, I actually met my co-founder in the next startup, which you would say, okay, but if I didn't do this,
yeah,
I wouldn't meet my second co-founder in the second startup.
Yeah.
And through the second startup, I actually, because I was the CFO, and my job was to build strategy and talk to investors and so on, we were shifting and, you know, pivoting. You know, grocery was, and still is, there is a lot of back and forth in the business model. So I figured that in the region, we, in the grocery stores, especially in Saudi and most developing countries, they have this, they call the defter, the book, the ledger.
Yeah.
Basically, once they get to know the customer, they start giving them credit. And I was like fascinated. I didn't know anything about, like, I know finance, yeah. I know banking, I know that, but I was not passionate necessarily about it. I was passionate about the problem. When I saw it, I was like, let me dig deep. This is a much deeper problem than just a grocery issue. So I dug deep, and I realized this is offered by not only the grocery shop, but also the barber shop, the laundry shop, all the neighborhood shops that we visit, that have low tickets, that know us very well. We visit them frequently. So basically, the idea came to me.
Yeah.
I didn't seek it.
Mm.
And I think the way I do it myself, how to be ready for it, is to continue to read on an ongoing basis on different businesses, different companies. I'm still to date. I spend my weekend sometime reading the financials of different companies and their reports, and I start to understand how they do things. And you continue to build your knowledge until it comes. And once it comes, you have to believe 100% in it and go ahead.
Yeah. You know, I remember when I was starting Bezat, one of the hardest things was leaving the safety net, as you mentioned it. And I kept having this voice in my head, what if I don't succeed? And when I look back on it, I think there was an aspect of social shame. Like, if I don't succeed, what will my friends say? What will my family say? Alhamdulillah, the company's still here and we're doing well. But you went through that experience and you, to a certain extent, fell flat on your face. And what's your perspective around that, around what you learned from that experience, around how do you manage that mental conversation that happens around shame, failure?
So, back to intelligence, you gotta know what you're good at. I am good at pain. I know that I can sustain pain for a long time. And I think this is very, very critical for an entrepreneur. If you like comfort, if you like to, you know, not be bothered by pain, then this is not yours. It's fine. It's not necessarily good or bad. I just don't think it's someone who's not good with pain or uncertainty. I realized early in my life that I'm good at pain. And whether it's shame or whatever, that feeling of being under pressure is something that I cope with. I learned how to cope with as I grew older. And I was willing to do everything to make it work. So, in fact, I did my readings before I did my first startup. And I realized there is no one that made it big that had a plan B. You cannot have a plan B. You have to hit a wall. If you have a plan B, it will be so tough, you will go to plan B. Always. So I just knew that, you know, I can sustain it. And I still in that phase, like, I train, I run marathons now, and it's a mental exercise. It's a mental exercise of handling pain to the extreme where you know you can go through it. You can figure it out. You can manage your body. You can, you know, you train yourself to handle it. So whether it's failure, shame, bankruptcy, you call it whatever, it's something you can never, ever control. You do your job, then you go to bed. That's what I do. I do my job, and then I sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good to hear you sleep well at night. I struggle with that. You've not only overcome pain from a work perspective, you've also overcome challenging times from a pain perspective on a personal level. I'd love if you can share your story battling, you know, a very difficult thing like cancer and, you know, being here, alhamdulillah, to tell the story.
Yeah, I think this was before I started my first startup. So after I graduated from my master's, I came back to Saudi, and I was actually in Dubai when I realized that I have it. I was going for my CFA exam at the time. And that experience taught me a lot about pain, which is actually, you know, I was happy. I was very happy. I was enjoying my time, going out, chilling, doing nothing. You know, I can't control it. Like, it is what it is. And once you're, especially pain that you don't choose is much easier, by the way. Like, if you ask me today, what is easier, building companies or going through cancer? It's definitely going through cancer for me. For me, I'm not talking about others. But because for me, I think there is a difference between something you know you can't quit. Mentally, it's tough. You can just quit, go get a job, and, you know, enjoy life. Because most entrepreneurs are very talented. They will get a good job.
Yeah.
No entrepreneurs that I met that is not able to get a good job. So mentally, it's very tough. So through that experience, I learned, you know what? I can actually be happy even if I don't have things that people think they need to have to be happy. So whatever happens, I can be happy, you know, until the last day of my life. So, and that is, you know, that was a very, very important lesson that was absolutely essential for me before I started my first startup. So if I didn't know that, I think I would have not understood myself, which is, I think, is very critical in the journey to know who you are and why you're doing what you're doing. Because there are people who do it for the money and they make a ton of money, but I don't want to be them. And I don't like them. It's not fun. They're not fun people. They're too rigid. They just want to make money. I want to build companies, work with people, and enjoy it. And if I do well, we do well together. If I don't do well, I did my job, and it is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
That understanding of who I am played the critical role in knowing that I will continue to build companies as much as I can.
Yeah, and I think you can tell people who are building companies for the money versus for a bigger purpose or for a reason that goes beyond that based on the way they're building the company. If you're building a company to make money, you cut a lot of corners. And when you're building a company to last, you're building something that will outlive you as a founder, outlive the executive team that's in place, and you're building a culture that sustains itself. You focus a lot more on that versus the bottom line, and it translates and transpires to everything you do. So I
100%.
I completely agree with you.
100%.
You've talked a lot. We're going to have to call this episode, you know, something around being sadistic, because it seems like you love pain so much. But what can you tell me about how do you actually manage the pain? How do you manage, you know, I think building startups is a marathon. But it's like a marathon where you're sprinting the whole time. And so being able to sustain the race is equally as important as being able to take on the pressure. And so what have you learned through your experiences building companies and your personal experiences on how to sustain the pain, how to manage the pain, how to manage mental, the talk? You know, sometimes we all go through these periods in life, not only in building companies, where you have a conversation with yourself, and sometimes that conversation can be negative, right?
100%. Listen, I think I disagree with you that it's a sprint. You need to sprint sometimes, but you need to pace yourself. So I think it's exactly like a marathon. If you actually sprint too hard, where you burn out, you basically ended the journey. But I think it's exactly where the same metaphor in marathon, where you have to be very close to where you can collapse, but do not get to it. Be careful. So you have to know who you are, and you build your stamina, by the way, like just sports, mentally. Yeah. I think I'm building my stamina in many ways. So, but I think it is actually, you have to be so close to burnout, but not in it.
Yeah.
Like, it is a fine line that you need to know about yourself.
Yeah.
You know when to take time off, cut off completely. You know when to go at it. You have to, for instance, sleep. It's not that I don't have any nights that I don't sleep, but most of the nights, I was like, I try to control myself in a way where I am in control. Like, there is nothing I can do. If I can't do anything, I shut down. There's nothing. So you have to, because some people overthink things that they know they cannot control. But naturally, they go into it. And the same thing in building companies. So I think it's very important that you have that capacity of control. And that comes, again, like even from things that are not related to business, like running, for instance, and discipline. Like, I think one of the areas where, thanks to my mom, I'm really good at is discipline.
Yeah. You're going to have to make sure she watches this episode now. I will. Shout out.
Yeah, shout out to my mom. She used to take me to the mall when I was young a lot, and just window shopping. And it's so painful to do window shopping when you're young. I cannot forget it. I was like, I want this. No. You don't know why. Just no.
Yeah.
And then I realized, you know what? Not everything you want, you should get. And I grew up with it, so I'm disciplined when it comes to food and so on and so forth. But it's actually came from my mom, and I think it has to do with discipline. If you actually intentional about it, then you become in control of yourself.
Yeah.
Because many of us, you see it. They talk about what they want. I want to do X. I want to do Y. But I can't push myself. Something is missing. And I think it's because they're not disciplined enough to actually feel in control. So to make sure you're not burning out, you need to be also disciplined in saying, okay, I'm gonna just take a breather.
Yeah.
You will be. I've been stressed in many ways. Mm. My Garmin gave me that in many ways. But it's still, I try to be as disciplined as possible when it comes to knowing that, you know, just let go, take a breath and focus. And one more thing here. You need, in my personal experience, I read a lot about entrepreneurs. So I read a lot about people who built companies. And I think it's very, very critical to really know as much as possible. Read. Spend time reading about them, how they do it. Because if you're disciplined and you do all of that and you're good with pain, but you're actually not know, you don't know anything about what you're doing, also you will not, you will not go anywhere. So you have to do the work which is related to basically knowing how to build companies. So, and one thing I know for sure in building companies, I care a lot about building the best team possible. Mm. So you take some off your shoulder, you need to make sure you have the best team. If you don't have the best team, then something will fall at the end because you're having too much on your shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah, I think discipline is probably one of the most underrated characteristics in
building. It's a superpower, man.
It's a superpower.
It's a superpower.
And I think there's a misconception around discipline. I think people correlate it with motivation. It's the antithesis of motivation. I mean, I'm not in the business of quoting Mike Tyson, but I will today. I think he said, discipline is doing what you hate, but doing it like you love it anyways. And that's the definition of discipline, is being able to show up and do something even though you don't feel like doing it. And I think there's a lot of misconception around you do something because you feel like it. Actually, if you do it consistently with the right level of discipline, you will start feeling like it. So it's not the feeling that takes you to action. It's showing up, taking the action that creates the feeling thereafter.
100%. No, 100%. I actually believe it, that this is a superpower. You have to work in discipline and think about discipline. And it's a character. It's not work. You cannot just be disciplined at work. You need to take control of who you are as a person and make sure whatever you do, whatever it is that, regardless of what people say, you're good with.
Yeah.
But discipline is that you know whatever you're doing is you're good with.
Yeah.
You're good with whatever, then you're disciplined. But the problem, I feel like sometimes people are doing things, you ask them, why are you doing this? It's like, I have an urge, and I go for that urge. Mm. I think controlling that urge is critical,
And I think one thing on the topic of discipline that I've learned in the past year and started to shape a lot of the way I think about it is, it's a muscle, actually. Discipline's a muscle. And there's a lot of studies that show now that if you train yourself to say no when you really want something, that, so like that extra piece of chocolate, or that, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with food, so my examples will rotate around that. But saying no to yourself, you start training that a specific part of your mind that neurologists now know is the part of your mind that's correlated to discipline. And so what you're saying to a certain extent is the way you do anything is the way you do everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, recently I got into intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 years ago. And I last year I learned something significant.
Yeah.
For me. We had a workshop, a strategy workshop, and for me to sustain that intermittent, I had to skip and eat only one meal. And I realized, wow, I can actually have a good day with one meal. And then after that, I decided to give it a try and actually go for the one meal, which I've heard about. Yeah. But I was like, that's crazy. That's nonsense. Nobody can live with one meal.
Yeah. But we do it in Ramadan.
But people eat a lot in Ramadan. That's not one meal, my friend. So I was like, this is actually doable. Like, you can. It's all you have to do is decide. Like, you know what? I'm going to be busy, work my day, enjoy my day, have a full focus, and eat a very good dinner. Mm. I enjoy my dinner now. Like, you have no idea. I eat ice cream every night. But it's a reward, like, because yeah. I'm actually keeping my calories exactly where I need them to be. Mm. But I'm being disciplined during the day, and I'm actually being fully focused during the day. Mm. That is actually was a shock to me. I learned it about my that actually it's possible. You can be in control so much that you can do something that you thought completely insane. If I tell most people, you can't, you have no energy. How can you have energy? I was like, absolutely wrong. Yeah. People, I didn't know before then that people can live without food for 60 to 90 days.
Wow.
60 to 90 days. Yeah. We think we need 3 meals a day. Yeah. So it's that
it's
level where you actually, if you go deep in yourself, you can take so much control.
Yeah, and it has positive impacts in other in all areas of your
my
life.
My focus, man. I do, you know, as a CEO, today managing more than 600 people, it's a tough day every day where you have to be focused, be in the moment, be able to listen. You need energy. And your digestive system requires a lot of energy if you eat. So I rather have it shut down. My blood is all in my brain. I'm fully focused during the day.
Yeah. So between Nana and Tamara, you've probably raised, what, like $600 million between both, roughly?
Yeah, almost.
No. Can you talk about fundraising?
So, fundraising was non-existent when I started my first startup. And thanks to the amazing transformation that we all feel in the region with Saudi leadership, the market has transformed significantly. In fact, not only funding, but also culture.
Yeah.
There was no culture. There was no culture of startups, hard work. There was just have a nice, good job and then take a good summer.
Yeah.
That's how it felt.
Mm.
But this now is in the complete opposite.
100%.
From funding to culture, which is amazing. What we have done in Tamara, in Ana, and many startups in the region would have not been possible without this change. It's not me or anyone. We were ready. With the right leadership, we developed what we actually we were ready to do. So, which is a positive note to the region, which is we have the talent, we have the people. And I think now to funding money looks for return. If you have a great company with a great, business and opportunity, as of today, the region has enough money to fund you. And of course, I will be very honest here. Tamara is an exceptional case. I don't think what happened is normal. Like, it shouldn't be the case that you just grow this fast. But we got lucky with timing, with a lot of things that propelled us to become what we became today. So, but in general, I think the funding environment today, the culture we have, and the amount of talents we have is definitely way, way better than when I started my first company.
Yeah.
So I think if these three things exist, talents, culture, and capital, you can build a great startup.
Yeah. I think we're seeing the shift now, but leading up, I'd say, to 2022, there was this preconceived notion that you need capital to start a business, to be able to grow. You've been on one side, which is, yeah, mashallah, you guys have raised a lot of funding. What's your perspective on the other side, which is trying to bootstrap, trying to build, and how does someone starting out approach it day zero and have the discussion? What is the decision-making framework in their mind to say, should I be fundraising, should I be building?
Look, I think as we, you know, agreed already that there are multiple ways to do it.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to fundraise to get things done, but there are certain industries that you have to. You have no choice but to actually fundraise, because if you don't, you will not have the capital to serve the customer. So if you're building a SaaS, for instance,
yeah,
you might not need to fundraise if you have enough capital yourself, friends and family, bootstrap, get revenue, and actually build it in your own way. But if you're building, and also, like, if you have no competition, it's different than when you have competition.
Yeah, correct.
So there are, it's a case-by-case situation. I don't think it's either right or wrong. But I think you should never think about capital as an achievement.
Mm.
That's why
100%.
I refuse to celebrate raising my money. Yeah. I think even in the team and everything, I personally don't celebrate rounds. I think it's not really an achievement in themselves. They are a recognition, no doubt, but you should not, as an entrepreneur, think about them. Make sure your focus is in the customer, your focus is in the numbers, you're actually progressing, and then money will come. But in the meantime, you have to make sure you're actually selling if you're a founder that needs money.
Yeah.
You're going out there, you're talking to investors, you're not sitting in your own space waiting for the world to come. You have to connect, meet investors, get them excited, especially if you need capital, given the competitive landscape or the business model and so on.
Yeah. I think sometimes when you're in the outside looking in, the milestone is the fundraise. I think when you raised your last round, I texted you, I said, congrats, more money, more problems. And you said, absolutely. So
yeah.
We were talking, I mean, there's this almost opposites of two things you've talked about throughout the conversation today. On one hand, you talk a lot about hard work, but then a few times the word luck has come up. And so I'd love to talk about the interplay of work, luck, and how these things can impact an outcome.
So, you know, when I was young, I was naive. I was thinking, there's nothing called luck. You get things you deserve.
Yeah.
And then I grew up, I realized, actually, the number one factor in a company's success is timing.
100%.
Number one factor, no doubt.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of luck.
Mm.
You have to, it's not purely luck, but it's a lot of luck as well.
Mm.
Because even Steve Jobs said it very eloquently. He said, those who make the most in technology are those who don't create a cycle, but actually catch a cycle right at the beginning.
Mm.
Actually, those who create a cycle die before it starts scaling, because they actually work so hard to make this cycle happen.
There's
and develop.
The stamina, yeah.
But then someone will catch the cycle at the right moment, and then will take it to the next level.
Yeah.
So, it's my favorite question in interviews. Like, it's a very cliche question. Work hard, work smart. But it is actually, a lot of people think working smart is enough.
Yeah.
It is not.
Yeah.
It is work hard, work smart, get lucky.
Yeah.
Get lucky, I absolutely believe it. I think it's, I'm lucky to be born in Saudi. I'm lucky to be who I am in this family. I'm lucky in many ways that I didn't choose. We don't choose a lot of things, but once you know that this factor is critical, actually you appreciate it more and you attract it.
Mm.
I believe I'm lucky, which is not a bad thing. I think it's this idea of trying to just be, you know, so unique and strong and talented and smart and hardworking and that's it and that's what made you, that's impossible, no. But it's a requirement as well. You have to do all of that and you have to get lucky.
Yeah, yeah. I completely agree with you. I think this has been one of the biggest shifts in my mindset in the past 2 years is having this belief that I'm lucky and almost manifesting it to being grateful. I think being grateful for me has allowed me to prime my mindset every day that in the grand scheme of things, like we're all, everybody in this room is extremely lucky. We should all be grateful that we're where we are right now. In other places in the world, people are struggling to stay alive and struggling to eat. And with that perspective, I think it puts things into a point where you attract what you want to attract and you prime your mind to say, no matter what happens throughout the day, in the grand scheme of things, alhamdulillah.
100%. 100%. Yeah. And to what you said, I think when you think about it as well, if you believe in you're lucky and you believe in luck, you become positive. People are attracted to positive people. If you just say, oh, we're not going to make it. Come on, man. We're not going to make
it. You're in the wrong place. You're in the wrong job.
Okay, we're not going to make it, so we're quitting. But if you tell people, we're going to make it, and then you get lucky and you make it because they stick with you.
Yeah.
Or you meet people and you have to be positive and you have to, in a way, make sure people around you feel that you're actually believing it. And that is how it eventually even manifests itself. People will feel it. Mm. When you're not actually believing that it will happen, it will work, and you will get lucky, people around you will feel it and it will not work for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we could spend the next 2 hours having this conversation, but I want to say thank you very much for your time. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with the audience. It's been a lot of fun. And I have no doubt, inshallah, that from here to bigger and better things. And I'm happy to hear you sleep well at night. That in and of itself is a ni'mah. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for taking the time. Thanks to all of you for the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.